Another thing quickly is that we're seeing a re-engagement also in the area of trade. And as we know, trade is important to ensuring vaccines get from labs in the first world to airports and arms in the developing countries. So there have been some positive signals that the Biden administration will re-engage on WTO matters. And I also agree that in the Caribbean, we have to be strategic and clear-sighted and unified in our engagement with the U.S. You know, it can't be the situation where, you know, there's a divide and rule that seems to be the case, where some countries agree to one thing and then others agree to something else. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a need for us to be a lot more strategic in terms of how we engage with the US with regards to trade, with regards to other issues. And then lastly, I agree wholeheartedly with Mr. Dega that we have to leverage the diaspora more. We often think of the diaspora mainly in terms of attracting diaspora investment, for instance, facilitating trade, but there's a lot of soft power that the diaspora wields in terms of its networks, its know-how, its connections with the movers and shakers in power that we could leverage to assist us. So I'll just leave that there and happy to discuss further.
Thank you so much. This has been really enlightening so far. I have so many things going on in my head, and I believe that some of our listeners do too, as we have a couple of callers on the line. So let's bring them into the conversation. And remember, all of you out there who want to get in, the number is 434-1790. Good morning. This is Brass Tax Sunday.
Good morning.
Good morning. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. We all would have heard of Adolf Hitler and the horrific history that he had with the Jews. And I remember on watching the news prior to the election of Donald Trump, that this man, Ahmed Ejad, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but at every opportunity he rose to speak, he would speak that he would annihilate Israel. And he constantly said that. They said, I even heard him say that the Holocaust did not even happen. And we all know historically that one of the best allies of Israel has always been the United States of America. Now, prior to Donald Trump becoming the president of the United States, the former president, Barack Obama, he made a deal with Iran, which was run by the Sayyid Ahmadinejad. I don't know if he's president, prime minister. I can't remember the title he was given, who is a sworn enemy of Israel, whereas they received so much money, you know, and they lied. Well, at least we, like Trump, believe that they would not keep their promises, that they would not invest in nuclear weapons. I mean, every day you're getting up saying you're going to wipe one of your neighbors off of the map. I mean, that is a cause for concern. So here it is that Trump becomes president, and he says he's going to make it a priority to change the relations in terms of the Middle East peace process. And he condemns this peace of policy, and suddenly he is called a racist, because obviously people are looking at color and not at policy and all the fancy terms y'all are giving it, multilateralism and all that stuff. So now we know anybody that has a modicum of common sense, and I don't mean it in a derogatory term, but follows the news, we know that terrorism, it does not only affect America, but even in the Middle East. I mean, Middle Eastern people who are practicing Muslims, they're up against, ISIS, but I wanted to start with the Taliban. There's another group, I can't remember it offhand, and there was ISIS. I mean, that was outrageous where they were beheading people. Now, Trump has been following politics for a long time, even though he wasn't a politician, because he was, you know, he was jeered in his run-up that he was not a politician and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So I keep saying to people, stop following the CNN. Stop following these people who want to put your head in another place. Follow what is really happening on the ground. Now, for a long time, especially Middle Eastern people, I find they are more ahead of us when it comes to the vaccines issues and stuff. We knew for a long time that these people well, they call us conspiracy theorists. You can call me that. I don't care. These people make diseases and then they create cures and then they have to sell to us. Donald Trump was one of those presidents, the first president that over 51 years has stood up and argue with the pharmaceutical companies, lower drug prices for your seniors, for people, investigate these vaccines that so many mothers across the world are saying that are causing autism. You know what I'm saying? So this whole hullabaloo and this wishy-washy stuff that somehow Donald Trump is against the world and people, if I am giving you and I am not getting back, it's like a relationship between a male and female, whether it's the male or the female. If I'm in a relationship and I'm giving 60 and you're only giving 40, it's imbalanced. So I am going to sit down and I'm going to say, is it worth my time? And that is what Donald Trump is.
Let's give the panelists, you said a lot there. I think there are at least two issues that you have brought in. One, I believe, has to do with the approach of the United States of America to the Middle East. I would sum it up in that way. And I think you are trying to say that the Trump approach was a beneficial one, as opposed to the previous Obama and possibly the future Biden. And there was also an issue there relating to pharmaceutical companies, vaccines. There is a lot of skepticism that abounds about the relationship between pharmaceutical companies and these vaccines that are being developed, many in development today. Panelists, is there anything out of that call that you would like to respond to?
I will give it a try. The caller raises a number of issues, conflicts, some that are not necessarily related. But I know we are not, and a lot of it is outside of the scope of what we're supposed to be discussing today. But just a few corrections on the issue of Iran and Israel and the nuclear agreement. The president of Iran was not Ahmadinejad when the agreement was signed. Second, it was agreed by everyone who monitored that Obama era nuclear proliferation regime that Iran was adhering to its terms. And if you have a number of regulators representing countries and international agencies attesting that Iran is adhering to the regulations, I'm not sure what is the issue there. And on the other hand, the Trump administration unilaterally and against the interests of all concerned withdrew from the agreement. It is only then that Iran retaliated. So it wasn't that Iran was infringing on the regulations of the agreement. It is that the Trump administration withdrew. There's also the small point that everyone ignores. Israel is the only country in the Middle East which has nuclear weapons.
Nuclear weapons, yeah.
And is the recipient of the more aid from the U.S. than all other countries in the world combined. So while the U.S. has people living in abject poverty, every day billions of dollars are sent to Israel to prop up its armed forces to commit genocide. But notwithstanding that, on the issue of vaccines and these conspiracies, I think I have come to the conclusion that there's no use in arguing the facts, the science, the evidence, to people who are hell-bent on not seeing what is right in front of them. If people have religious or ideological motives driving them to say and believe certain things, sometimes you just have to let them be. I've come to the conclusion that, you know, these conspiracy theories, many of them project, you know, these images of being international experts on everything, and they know little. But I don't think, you know, sometimes it's worth engaging with them.
I think I watched something that was quite interesting yesterday evening, and it was not about this. It was about a conspiracy theory. And what I found was interesting about it was that there was some evidence in there that was true and factual. But then the kinds of theories that ballooned from that were where you ended up with these conspiracies. So one of the things that I know people have been very skeptical about with relation to vaccines has been the skepticism we have of pharmaceutical companies, that they may very well be in this business for money making and may not be concerned with global health, with actually curing us, ensuring that we equitably have access to decent standards of living and health, really. And this brings me back, if we're going to refocus the conversation a little bit, to what you mentioned earlier, Mohammed, about the United States, and Dr. Grenade and Alicia, Ms. Nichols, also mentioned similar. The United States re-entering the World Health Organization and the COVAX facility. So, and what is quite interesting about this, if you actually read up on the COVAX facility, you will see that there is this Global Vaccine Alliance, Gavi, as it is called, which is important in helping to round up all of the types of vaccines that are being trialed to provide this facility, this pool of vaccines from which countries of the world are supposed to be able to pull. And I know some of the skepticism that people have relates to the fact that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation provided the seed funding for this entity. But they did provide the seed funding for this entity in 1999. So this is not something that is new. This is an entity that has existed from 2000 and has been doing a lot of work for the global delivery of vaccines. That's Gavi, not COVAX. So the United States of America re-entering the World Health Organization, agreeing to be part of this COVAX facility. What does it mean for us in the region? Does it mean anything? I open this to you, panelists.
If I may, yes, please. I think it does mean a lot because we don't produce vaccines in the Caribbean, yet we need vaccines to be able to fight this virus. So if there is a global arrangement that we can participate in and benefit from, it becomes important. I think what's necessary, public education. We need to be able to speak about the importance of vaccines. But I think what is at play here is that tension between the state and the market and mistrust among citizens in both the state and the market, globally, I'm speaking now. So how do we, in a pandemic, regain trust of citizens to be confident enough in something that could be life-saving? It calls for a lot of public education, a lot of awareness building. So we have to be doing that at the same time as we have to try to get vaccines into people's arms. And I think that the state and the market corporations, their interest in maximizing profit is at the heart of all of this. How then do we govern the process? What becomes the role of states, of global institutions, to ensure that there's equity in vaccine distribution, that there is access so that the developing countries such as ours in the Caribbean can have access to like life-saving vaccines. And it's the challenge of our time, perhaps, but it has really exposed what has always been there in terms of the divide, in terms of more developed and least developed countries and some of the real tough issues that we have to fight through. Yeah.
Right. Ms. Nichols, Alicia, I see you nodding your head. Go on.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Hines. And I agree with Dr. Grenade that the USA's participation in COVAX is important because when you have the world's largest economy participating in a mechanism which is meant to subsidize access, developing countries' access to vaccines needed to help bring an end to this this pandemic. That is important, particularly for us in the region. And another reason why is because we want us to be able to access vaccines which have gone through the proper vetting process. I was watching a program recently which talked about the fact that not in the Caribbean, but some of the countries, there's been concern over the other countries being forced to look at vaccines that have been produced in other countries. I wouldn't say which, but other country which might not have necessarily gone through the most rigorous of testing and vetting processes. So, and the reason why they've done it is because obviously lower costs. So, but you don't want a situation where countries are so cash strapped, and as we know in the region, you know, where most of us are tourism dependent economies, so we're not getting the level of revenues that we were getting before. We are not getting we're not getting the level of FDI that we were getting before, so the revenue is not coming in.
FDI, remember?
I'm so sorry. You know how it is with us. That's foreign direct investment. My apologies. Right. We're not getting the level of foreign direct investment needed in order to buffer our government coffers. So where's the money going to come from to afford these vaccines? And then when you have a situation like obtained in many of our Caribbean countries, Barbados is a prime example, where they're considered too rich in a way because of their per capita GDP. Income per capita. We are actually ranked by the World Bank as high income, believe it or not, because of our sorry, go ahead, Dr.
You finish and I'll come in.
Okay, because of our income per capita, that means access to concessional funding is not possible in many circumstances. So you can't go to capital markets and get good rates because your debt is through the roof. You can't get concessional funding, but then at the same time, you're not getting the revenue that you were getting before, and you're in an IMF program. So it is going to be very important that we be, you know, we are able to get access to these vaccines through something like COVAX, which will ensure that we could get these vaccines at a reasonable price, and also vaccines that are well vetted and not, well, black market vaccines, so to speak.
So there are a couple of things that I would like to bring in here. First of all, we have someone on the WhatsApp indicating that Cuba produces vaccines in the region, so we shouldn't say that vaccines are not produced in the region. This is true. I don't know if they have, in fact, produced one related to COVID-19. However, someone would have to clarify that for me. But on your last point that you were making, Alicia, Ms. Nichols, what I found very interesting in looking into the COVAX facility is that any country in the world can be a member of this facility. And the United States agreeing to provide funding for this is quite useful because this funding goes to those countries who are viewed as unable to be able to pay. So this facility is supposed to allow for every country, especially vulnerable countries, middle income, low income, and they like to have access to at least enough vaccinations that have been vetted and so on, as you've noted, for 20% of their population. However, on the list, Barbados is not in that list of countries that has access to funding, right? So they're not getting funding as in aid, as we might call it sometimes, to access these vaccines. Again, as you mentioned, because of this income category, right? In the region, we have Dominica, Grenada, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Haiti, and I believe Guyana are those that are eligible to have this concessionary funding of access to vaccines. And I think this is very important for us to bear in mind because although this facility does provide access to a pool of vaccines and the funding that the US will contribute here may be useful, it doesn't really solve the problem that we may have in Barbados, for instance, in terms of being able to access the vaccines for the entire population on a concessionary basis. And I just have a quote here that I would like to read to you all. This is taken from the Nation newspaper on the 17th of November, 2020. And this was Prime Minister Motley. She was speaking at the launch of the Debt Relief for Clean Energy Report in 2020. And she notes that we joined the call today for debt relief to be extended beyond to the public and the private sector and beyond the poorest to middle-income countries, highly vulnerable to pandemics and to climate crisis. And what we see is that the Barbados government, from Ms. Motley in particular, the Prime Minister, have been asking, even before the COVID-19 pandemic, for some special considerations to be put in place for countries such as Barbados, who may be in this higher income category, but who are very vulnerable to things such as natural disasters and also pandemics, to be given some special consideration in the provision of loans. So there's this natural disaster clause that has been developed. And also now, in the case of dealing with this pandemic. Can I get your thoughts, panelists, on this? I don't know if I've gone on too long. Anyone wants to come in? Mohammed, yeah. Wendy? Yeah.
So a few points. This, the nature of COVAX and... So most people would think that COVAX is going to help everyone, all the countries that are not able to afford or who don't manufacture drugs. But as you pointed out, countries like Barbados, because of our middle income status, are disadvantaged. And that point for me highlights the need for a CARICOM approach, you know, where we operate as one, as a unified body, and tackle these matters. We have that strengthens our individual interests by going collective. So I was disappointed that, you know, some of us are approaching other countries individually, mm-hmm. And not as a group. I think that's short-sighted and strategically hinders us. But the COVAX and that regime and the way it functions highlights also tensions which were alluded to or mentioned by Ms. Nichols and Dr. Grenade about the tensions between the corporate good, the corporate interests, and the public good. And I will draw an example when I was at the UN. And I covered HIV/AIDS issues. And when we were negotiating as the international community on a UN HIV/AIDS declaration, the US vehemently opposed any type of reference to the universal access to drugs because it was protecting its corporate interests. The interests of the corporations and their patents. So when we're involved in Gavi or COVAX, we have to remember that at the end of the day, big countries will protect what they consider to be important to them. So, you know, we have to recognize these things, and a lot of the public are remaining aware of this. And for that reason, there's always this balance between the corporate interests, the public interests, and the tensions in the international community between those countries and countries which prefer a more equitable type of regime. And so that again comes around with the point of CARICOM and division and be going it alone and shooting ourselves in the foot.
Right. And Jess, thank you so much for that. I know we have some calls on the line. Also, the WhatsAppers are quite active. One person has indicated that there is a vaccine, a COVID-19 vaccine from Cuba that began trials in March. I don't know what the status of that is now or whether it is within the COVAX pool of vaccines. Let's go to the phone lines and see what our callers are saying. Good morning, Brass Tack Sunday.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes,
how are you?
Go ahead. I'm fine, thanks. And you?
I am Maury. I would not even waste my time. You know what Mr. Hamid did just now, and that is responding to your first call.
Okay.
Now, President Biden himself admitted it's going to get worse before it gets better. And to me, that's being very, very, very honest. It must also be noted that the last United States president did nothing about the pandemic. Nothing. Even encouraged people not to wear masks. He did that. That is a known fact. It must also be noted that the United States political system is very different to the political system that exists in the West Indies. Individually, the Prime Minister of the West Indies has more power than the United States President. Winning the presidency is one thing. You must also win the Senate and Congress. If you don't do that, all you have is the luxury of being saying that you're President of the United States.
But even now, if I may interject in your call a minute, and the Democrats currently do have that, and still President Biden is having some difficulties in pushing through his COVID relief package in the United States. So even then, there are constraints on the presidency when there's a slim majority. But go ahead. You continue, sir.
Yeah. We plan to operate under the Westminster system. I see things that politicians do in the region that under the real Westminster system, politicians have been taken down for doing less. What we have effectively done is to use what we want to use and take out what we want to take out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that is a known fact. It's not that makeup. I feel at times like this. I think, although I have my own views about hearing people saying that you bring politics into this COVID thing, but you have to bring politics in it because it was a government that made the decision. Politicians. Mm-hmm. It was politicians who refused to listen to me and other callers on the radio. Maybe we're calling for restrictions on certain things like public transportation and people sitting together and that kind of thing. You know, panel? Dennis Johnson? No, they have to take full responsibility. But I have always said this, and we keep on saying it, I don't want any government to fail, whether they support the party or not. Because when that government fails, all of us, all of us suffer. And the quicker party supporters from both sides realize this, the better it would be for this country.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. Would our panelists like to respond to anything the caller mentioned? Yes, Alicia, Ms. Nichols, and then Dr. Grenade.
Okay. Sure. I agree with the caller. Of course, that leadership matters, and having a tone set from the White House, which encourages people to mask up, to take this thing seriously, is important towards getting the pandemic under control. I just wanted to add quickly, if I may, Dr. Hines, with regard to the discussion on the tension between public health and intellectual property rights, that's actually one of the discussions going on now in the World Trade Organization. For those who are not familiar, that is the multilateral body that regulates global trade, and which the majority of our countries, with the exception of the Bahamas, which is in the accession process, are member countries. And there are discussions, there was a proposal which is currently being brought by South Africa, India, has been signed off on by several other developing countries, which seeks to advance the argument that certain aspects of the WTO's agreement on trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights should be suspended to allow countries to facilitate access by countries, particularly those without manufacturing capacity and which need to import these vaccines and other PPE, etc., to allow them better access to these things without having to worry about these IPRs, intellectual property rights. So I just wanted to raise that as one of the issues that's currently being discussed.
Oh, thank you. That's quite interesting. And I think one of the things connected to that also is that this affects the price too, right? So if some of these patents and other restrictions are kind of loosened up for the purposes of pandemics and emergencies, this can decrease the price of not just vaccines, but other therapeutics as well. One of the WhatsAppers did also mention other therapeutics in addition to the constant focus on vaccinations. There's a comment here that I would like to read. It says, good morning. In yesterday's news, Dr. Ralph Gonzalez, it says chairman of CARICOM, but he's the former chairman of CARICOM because CARICOM is currently chaired by Trinidad and Tobago, expressed concern about our region's chance of getting vaccines as expected by April this year. The chance of this happening seems to look slimmer as the bigger countries make known their intention at getting their vaccines as scheduled. Your thoughts on this, please. I also noticed that in the United States of America, just a couple of days ago, there was this news about a Johnson & Johnson vaccine in that country and some of the results of that trial. And there are questions raised, obviously, about if countries in the region will have access to this. Does the U.S. presidency mean that we would have in the region more access to these vaccines being developed because they may be now within the COVAX facility? What do you all think of these things? Should we be so focused on vaccines? Because I know there are a lot of people who are somewhat concerned about vaccines as well. Panelists.